Welcome back. I'm Michelangelo Signorelli on Sirius XM Progress 127. We've been talking about health care. Of course, we were just talking about the Affordable Care Act, some of the problems with the website and the testimony before Congress, and also talking about how a lot of people, and we've been talking about this for the past couple of weeks, are able to now get insurance that they never could get before and have affordable insurance. And once these problems are fixed with the website, I think a lot of people are going to see just what kind of incredible change this is in many people's lives across the country, particularly just the pre-existing condition part of this. You know, a lot of people with HIV could not get insurance in the past because that was a pre-existing condition, as with other diseases. Then if they could, it was exorbitantly expensive. That all changes. Joining me to talk about the lives of people with HIV, which have changed dramatically, certainly over the past 15 to 20 years, is Perry Halkidis. He is a professor of applied psychology and public health and population health, and director of the Center for Health Identity, Behavior, and Prevention Studies, and associate dean at New York University, otherwise known as a New York University professor. And he is the author of The AIDS Generation, Stories of Survival and Resilience. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Welcome back
to the program, because I think you were on a few years ago.
I was.
That's right.
So thanks for having me again.
And you've also written at Huffington Post Gay Voices.
I have.
I'm editor-at-large, and great to see you there. Talk a bit about the book. It explores the lives of people, men who are HIV positive, as they grow older, the first generation that now really has lived and thrived and benefited from the drugs that really have saved their lives. Why did you decide this was something that really needed to be focused on and that you wanted to get out there?
So I would say there were three real motivations for writing this book. The first was to document these experiences of these men who are members of my generation, who came of age in the 70s and 80s and were devastated by the AIDS epidemic. And I didn't want people to forget what we lived through. So it's a historical document first and foremost. I would then say that in addition to that, if you look at the literature on LGBT populations, the research, a lot of it's based on deficit. And what I wanted to do is talk about what was successful in the lives of these men, how they navigated their lives even in the most dire circumstances, and honor that. And then finally, I think we have lessons to learn about how we deal with people who are living with HIV or any chronic disease based on the way that these men, these 15 men who constitute the book, whose stories constitute the book, navigated their lives, even at a time when there was no hope that they would live beyond 2 years.
It's such a different time. Younger generations, often, just looking at history in general, forget the past or didn't live the past, don't really learn it. And certainly the history of the AIDS epidemic is not something that's really, at the forefront of what people learn in school and, really passed down through education. It's really we, the gay community, the LGBT community, that has to pass it down. Talk a little bit about the importance of the history and passing it down.
Well, I think that we think of that period as incredibly difficult, but I think it's also an amazing time in LGBT history, a time when we all came together and fought for a common cause, and that should be celebrated. You know, my experience in teaching students who are now like 20, who were born, in the 1990s and have no memory of what the AIDS epidemic was like, is that they have no sense of the cruelty that this disease placed on our population. And I think it's important for our legacy to tell these stories. I think it's important for us to put the markers down in the history of the United States about how the LGBT population came together and lived through those 15, 20 years that were horrifying, and that we all watched the deaths, and we watched experienced the losses, and say, look how brave we were together, and how we came through this.
Talk about some of the men you interviewed and profiled, and certainly coming from very different experiences.
Right, I intentionally wanted to get very different stories, and I think that, I could have interviewed 1,500 men very easily. You know, I stopped at 15 when I felt like, you know, there was enough there to work with. The men are, you know, diverse in terms of their race and ethnicity. They're black men, they're white men, they're Latino men. Only a few of them grew up in the New York metropolitan area. Most of them grew up in other parts of the country. What's common about all of them is that they all became infected or became aware of their disease very early in their young adulthood. And that's what binds them. That's why I call them the AIDS generation. When they were coming of age at a time, you know, 10, 15 years post the Stonewall riots and the promise of a great sexual freedom and the promise of our lives being respected was there, this disease hit us. And that's what why I think that the disease very much defines this generation of men. And while their experiences and where they come from is somewhat different, the way they approach the disease, the way they manage the disease, the way they attended to their physical health, their emotional health, and their social health is what I think is the common theme that runs through this book and ties it all together.
What do they say about how the world responds today, and particularly how younger generations respond, younger generation of gay men, to AIDS and HIV? I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about, and certainly it's an issue you've addressed many times, unprotected sex, HIV transmission still occurring at the same rates or even higher than in the past, a real problem with prevention, and some of that because there's really no visibility of AIDS as a disease that has devastated people.
Sure. I agree with that. I think that, you know, bringing the discussion forward, you know, David Francis' film, a book like mine, the discussions we're having about what we live through, bring attention to the issue of HIV continuing to exist in our population. Talking to these men, one of the most interesting parts of the conversation was their reaction to a young generation of men getting infected with HIV and their disbelief that the epidemic continues to exist in our population. You know, and it was a very interesting dialogue because their reactions when I would ask them about that was that, well, they should know better, and you know, we'd do things differently. And I really pushed back in talking to them and saying, really, if you were 20 years old right now, you would be having safe sex all the time. And the reason I pushed them to think that way, and I pushed them to really examine their belief system, is because if we come from a place of judgment, my generation, then we're certainly not going to help younger men deal with this epidemic and deal with the other diseases that are affecting us.
It really is, you know, the classic situation of, you know, every older generation on every issue, right? Shock and disbelief at how the young people behaving, forgetting how they would behave. And I guess for gay men, that's a real learning experience because I think gay men probably have thought they would never be that. They would never be their parents in that way.
Right. And I think that, you know, certainly my generation, I as a 50-year-old and these other men who are about my age, you know, didn't think we were going to make it to this point in our lives. Like, we're here we are. So here we are. We're alive. We're healthy. We have a responsibility. And part of that responsibility is to act as role models to future generations, to share these stories, to help them navigate what, if we all remember, what was a very treacherous and difficult time being a young adult. This is not an easy time in one's life. And so if we can act as role models, that'll be really key in sort of enhancing the health of our community.
Talk a bit about how people's lives change. First, you know, sort of the physical and obviously, you know, the way that drugs really literally save their lives. And then I want to talk more about the psychological impact as well. I mean, we've been talking about the Affordable Care Act and health care and many more people now able to get health care. And, you know, I put, you know, the roots of all of this movement for health care back at the AIDS movement, which really, I mean, you woke up everybody about the fact that we have a shambles of a healthcare system and really started demanding that. But at that time, going back to the 80s, people not only didn't have, you know, the means and the ability to get healthcare, but we didn't have any breakthroughs of any kind. Talk a little bit about the difference, what happened in their lives physically.
So some of the men were fortunate enough to remain relatively healthy until 1996, right? And so they speak about that. You know, other men reached rock bottom, right? They reached the most difficult points of their lives. In fact, one of the characters in the book, whose name is Richard, who's a musician, speaks very clearly about his body being depleted and having no energy. And, you know, eventually he comes out of it and he creates his music, and the music gives him energy again. But it's not, you know, the music is key, but what's also key is 1995, 1996, when the epidemic completely changes, right? And we have this huge loss between 93 and 95. People are dying at the highest rates. The men in our population are dying. And then 96 is this massive breakthrough. And I think David France does a beautiful job depicting that in How to Survive a Plague. But, you know, it was life transformative. All of a sudden, these men, most of whom were told they had 1 year to live, 2 years to live, 18 months to live, realized that there was a potential, as they were getting healthier, that they would have a full life. And I think many of them are still trying to reconcile and make sense of that, what it means to be 55 years old, when in fact at 25 years old they were expected to only make it to 27.
Right, and that gets obviously to the psychological impact as well. You start preparing for death, and people also get into relationships where the dynamic of their relationship is based on one of them is eventually going to die at some point, and now all of a sudden they're going to live, it changes the relationship.
Right. I think that the social and emotional dynamics are really fascinating. I frame it, you know, Eric Erickson is a very famous developmental psychologist who talks about these life stages and, you know, the various struggles we go through in this, each stage of our lives. And in our 20s, we're trying to establish our identity, you know, and then in our 50s and our 60s, we're establishing our place in the world. And what's really interesting in hearing these stories is that these men, many of my peers, were expecting to die, so didn't do the normal, and I say that in quotes, processes of a 25-year-old, of a 35-year-old. And so now, as they're in their middle age and approaching older adulthood, it's almost as like they have to go back and reconcile those struggles of earlier periods of their lives in order to move forward. And so it's interesting to see the men that I interviewed, so many of them, you know, marriage, something that is thought of, you know, or partnership, something that's thought of that people do in their 20s and 30s, are finally getting into long-term relationships, you know. Looking at, you know, their careers, their places in the world, going back and examining what happened or what they didn't do in their 20s so that they can then move forward in their 50s and their 60s. And that's hard. That's a really hard thing to do, because what it forces you to do is to relive all of the pain and all of the death that you witnessed for so many years.
Obviously, you interviewed men with HIV for the book, but the AIDS generation, I think, includes, you know, obviously everyone who's been affected by the epidemic, and not just gay men, obviously.
Right.
What is the impact? How do they talk about how they relate with those in their own community who are not HIV positive and carry a lot of guilt and, you know, asking that question, that eternal question, why me? Why don't I have it? And why, you know, they're alive too. I mean, it's kind of the same question, but from a different place, and almost feeling like they don't have the right to be asking it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the term the AIDS generation, I go out of my way in the book to really talk about, you know, not just positive gay men, but negative gay men, and anybody, in fact, of our generation. I think of my very dear friend Nancy, who is a 48-year-old woman, straight woman, who just was growing up in New York City watching all this. She's part of the AIDS generation. I think that as people get older, the issues of why I'm negative, why you're positive, become less important. The fact is that we've all made it here. We've all made it into middle age. We are now the elder statesmen of our community, and somehow we have to come together to be the model for the future generation. So I don't see those divides that might have existed when we were younger as apparent in this older generation of men.
And yet you see the divide among the younger
right.
generation
right.
of men. I mean, we have a lot of young gay men writing at Gay Voices, and we have young HIV-positive men talking about the same issues, and that's what's disheartening in a way, that, you know, we were talking about 20 years ago,
right.
feeling stigmatized
right.
because they have HIV, fearful of being open about it,
right.
even in the world today.
Right. I think that the 20-year-olds are doing the behaviors of 20-year-olds, you know, that we would have done it when we were 20 years old. You know, it's about establishing who you are in the world, and part of establishing who you are in the world is defining yourself differently from other people. That's not what you're doing in your 50s. And that's those men in their 20s will get there eventually. And I'm not justifying that stigma that exists is a good thing. But what I'm saying is that it's not surprising mm-hmm. developmentally that this is occurring.
You talk a lot about, and certainly, again, we've been talking about our country and our government and how we're going to deal with people who need health care and need to get health care. You talk about how we're really not prepared for an aging generation of people with HIV.
Right. I don't think we're ready for an aging generation, period, of baby boomers.
Right.
I think, you know,
There are not enough resources and too many people.
Right. And I think the expectations of the baby boomer generation are very different than generations that preceded us. So we have baby boomers we barely understand in their LGBT baby boomers, and within that, HIV positive LGBT baby boomers. And I think we know very little information. And I think that our service agencies are struggling to try to figure out how we're best going to serve the generation. Now, and, you know, it's interesting. I hope that if anything comes of this movement in the last couple of years with men of my generation, is that we come together again and form the agencies that we did in the 1980s to address our health. They're different, the issues now, but we came together and we did it in the 80s, and we can do it again.
In a way, though, it's like starting from scratch, in a sense, for this generation, because the previous older generation was devastated. The previous older people didn't make it to this age. Many of them, not all of them, but many of them died.
Right. And didn't make it to this age being openly gay men who could be married, right? In this country, it's a whole different circumstance right now. And so here we find ourselves having to define again for our social service agencies, for the government, what we need. And we need to be open and direct about what we need and demand it. And I think there is a movement, certainly afoot in cities like New York and San Francisco, among men of my generation to start those conversations. And I think it will get us someplace. It will get us to hopefully the beginnings of addressing what our needs actually are, because we're going to be around for the next 20 or 30 years.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I was just looking at a video that Lambda Legal had made, and this was like the third person like this I've come across in a week. Lambda Legal had made a video that they're going to be releasing focused on transgender rights, and they focused on a 92-year-old transgender woman who is a commercial pilot and still flies. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, that is a very different world when people, and you know, this is the third person I've heard about this week in their 90s, and you're right, 30 years is not something to think. 30, 40 years is
absolutely
not something to think isn't going to happen.
Right. I mean, and I think that, in some ways, there's been enormous change, in our lives over the course of the last 30 years. There will probably be enormous change 30 years moving forward. We have some problems that are still the same. The HIV epidemic is still very present in our lives, right? But, we have to grapple with this totality as a group coming together to make it clear who we are, what we are, and what we need. And what we need as LGBT people is not the same as what people in the general population necessarily need. And so, the Institute of Medicine, prepared a superb, superb report a couple of years ago about the health disparities faced by LGBT people. And I think that provides us a roadmap for how we move forward in addressing our health needs.
What's been the response so far to the book, and what have you heard?
It's been pretty amazing, actually. I think that everybody who's read it said that they have to read it, in small pieces. It's very difficult for them to read it from the front to the back because the stories are so incredibly powerful. I think it has empowered people to start to share their stories. I received several emails over the course of the last few weeks from people saying, I want to tell my story too. So I sort of want to write a version two here and add more stories here. The other thing that's been really amazing that I allude to in the book that, if I do write a second version that I would add a chapter to is how these men who I interviewed and were brought together have created this new band of brothers. And how this community, that they have lunch together, they meet together, they socialize together, they've created this bond for each other that I hope will grow, this group of age generation men. And I think it's been just beautiful to actually watch that happen.
Mm. Well, thank you for writing it and for coming in and talking to me about it.
Thank you so much for having me.
The book is The AIDS Generation, Stories of Survival and Resilience. Perry Halkidis is the author. We're back in a few minutes.
Michelangelo Signorelli.
Michelangelo Signorelli.
On Sirius XM.